think a lot of the times it was even the right decision, but the way it would happen was very FA in an unhealthy way, or it used to be, which was they'd be very quick. It's like suddenly I was like done. I would still fulfill obligations and things like that, but I didn't ever try at all, like sort of an in-between period to see if something could be better. And I think that really that's that FA boundary thing showing up in the work arena, because if there was a way to make it better, I wasn't going to try. And then boom, the hard boundaries. I guess I'm not going to stay at this job.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I am so excited you're here. I am your co-host, Thais Gibson, along with our new special host, Mike DiZio. This is a podcast that discusses everything related to integrated attachment theory, the new attachment theory, along with the subconscious mind, relationships, communication, needs, boundaries, and so much more. Throughout this podcast, you'll see a series of episodes I upload with new information, educational tips all about how to thrive in relationships and really master your emotional state in your life, along with special guests hosted by Mike DiZio to discuss all of these amazing topics in some longer form content. Thank you so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
My guest today is an integrated attachment theory and ICF certified Wayfinder life coach. She loves to companion people on their healing journeys to help them live their best lives and relationships. She's also an elemental rhythm breathwork facilitator who has experienced the transformative power of this methodology in supporting breakthroughs, integration, and overall well-being. Personal Development School podcast listeners, I'd like to welcome Sonia Salter. Hello, Sonia. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you so much for being here with us. So Sonia, just to start off, would you be able to tell us briefly about your background, maybe a bit of your backstory, basically what's brought you to where you are today?
Yeah. So interestingly, I came into the PDS work and the attachment work about a third secure. And I think that I attribute that a lot to the overall sort of stance or attitude of my parents towards their kids. They had a lot of respect for kids, you know, treated them not as like superior to them in some of those ways that sometimes can happen in parenting, and also like prioritized us in a lot of ways that were important. So I think a lot of my insecure attachment was actually from some traumas that were not at their hands. However, they had not done their own work, of course. And so a lot of people haven't and hadn't, especially maybe some decades ago. And so I definitely had modeled for me their own conflict style, which was not ideal. You know, a lot of just unhealthy verbal communication, some passive aggressiveness, some stonewalling. So I witnessed a lot of that. And then additionally, they would get emotionally dysregulated very easily. And so, for example, if something happened in school that upset me, I remember, you know, a few times trying to tell them about it, and it would immediately dysregulate them. And so, you know, I think it was a combination probably of being worried for me and maybe some of their own triggering.
Right.
But unfortunately, then that would lead to like almost immediately it devolved into here, I told them this thing. And then they would maybe start arguing themselves with each other, or maybe some even negativity towards me, which, you know, would probably be the opposite of what they would want in an emotionally regulated state. But it somehow went this way always, where there was this emotional dysregulation. And so I stopped sharing as much, but I also took very much in the family on the role of being sort of the emotional, I guess, having an emotional gauge for everyone, and also kind of have the peacekeeper role in the family, I would say.
Yeah, that's tough. You sparked a memory for me where, you know, you wanted to tell your parents something or like share your experience. And instead of sort of being supported, they would get like angry or have like not the best reaction to it. So then that just sort of makes you think like, geez, should I keep this stuff in? Should I just not bother sharing? I know my dad would get really upset sometimes. So it must have been really tough, you know, when you come to your parents for something and then they get really upset and seem very dysregulated, then, you know, it might scare you for next time to being like, maybe I shouldn't tell my parents what's going on for me because they seem to get really upset, or, you know, something bad happens after I share. And I know I had that experience as well with my father. He would get really uptight or angry or upset if I shared, you know, something that didn't go well for me. Then he would complain that I wasn't coming. I was going to my mom for everything and I wasn't going to him. And I was kind of like, well, every time I try to share something with you, you kind of freak out. So, you know, it sounds like your parents obviously did the best that they could, but there's certain things that, you know, we might take on because of their sort of unhealed behaviors and patterns. But overall, you know, thanks for sharing that. I wanted to ask, in your own life or your own kind of healing journey, was there like a realization, a rock bottom moment, someone you met? What was it that pushed you to dive into your own healing journey and learning about your attachment style and healing that?
There definitely was. It was in my long-term relationship, and I don't remember exactly how many years ago, but a couple of years ago. And, you know, I had done a lot of healing already, a lot of trauma work over the years. And then just a little before that, I had done some codependency work. And so I was having trouble understanding why that still wasn't shifting things with us. We were still, you know, locked in unhealthy communication patterns. You know, I didn't understand yet that this had to do with our attachment styles. And so in particular, when he would go into a dismissive, avoidant, defeatist thing, that was really hard for me because that felt like him not working on it. Although it didn't look exactly like that would look if someone just said they didn't want to work on it, right? Mm-hmm. But I was at a point also in my personal development where it felt non-negotiable to work on this all. So I was just really stuck. Like I knew we needed to work on things, we needed to change things, and I just couldn't understand why. So it started to make me actually doubt the relationship, which didn't make sense in a way, because like in a lot of areas, in so many areas as parents, just in other areas of partnership, we did great. And so it felt almost illogical to think that way. But at the same time, you know, we were really stuck in these certain ways and it just couldn't seem to shift.
So I was curious, when did you first hear about attachment theory? And when did you have that sort of aha moment that people seem to have about understanding yourself and your patterns of behaviors in relationships?
Yeah, it's funny because I can't pinpoint when I started, given that I just fell into this beautiful, gigantic rabbit hole and took it all the way. But I was watching a lot of YouTube videos in that time period, and somehow I must have stumbled upon Thais's videos. And so it just started to resonate. I took the attachment quiz and, you know, it just went from there. Then I joined for a few months PDS itself. Then I became a lifetime member and then I became a coach. So it just went from there. But going back again to the beginning, you know, I had minored in psychology. So I thought I knew about attachment styles. I kind of knew the general principles. I had been interested in it a little bit again, you know, at the beginning of my parenting journey. And so I think a lot of the aha here, I mean, it was partly just that I was insecure, that I was more insecure than not at all, because that was like a surprise to me. I didn't realize that attachment was involved at all in what was going on. I think because I hadn't understood, you know, which is something I think very much that Thais has brought to the world, that you can heal, right? So I hadn't understood that you can heal, and I hadn't understood that there can be these kinds of nuances, that you can have, can be maybe partly secure. You can have these sort of mixes and nuances to it. It had seemed very like black and white when I'd learned about it before.
Definitely. I love how Thais kind of gives sort of everybody hope that you can heal. And especially coming from an unhealed place herself, she had a lot of her own early life trials and tribulations. So just to give the hope for everyone. And I like what you said about how, you know, it's not just black and white. Like we can't just put somebody in a box of you're this, you're that. There can be sort of varying degrees of attachment trauma and insecure attachment styles. So that's really cool how you found that and dug right into it. You went all in for sure. So I know you've done a lot of work to become secure, obviously. What was your attachment style before you did this work? And if you want to share with our audience, like what were some of the hardest or most challenging things about being that attachment style?
Yeah, so I was mostly fearful avoidant. That was the majority percentage for me. And that explained a lot about what was the hardest, which was the volatility. It was that flipping back and forth. So I showed up most of the time, I leaned anxious, because I was polarizing that. And so my partner was polarizing more DA. So when we would get into our issues, I didn't understand yet that it was triggers and all this, right? But like when we would be triggered and have four wounds triggered and we were into that kind of a locked position, I guess you could say, in whatever issue we were trying to deal with. Yeah, I'd be showing up more anxious, like really trying to resolve it, really going hard at it, being the one more pushing for that. And then what I didn't understand again was that like when I got triggered enough, it was like, boom. And then I was like, you can't even be in the same room with me. Like I'm immediately like doubting the relationship at all. And then it could be anything from just a few minutes to like maybe half an hour later. That fast, I would flip back again. And so it was just like so hard to understand. I didn't feel volatile in other areas of my life. Like I said, I sort of had been this like emotional rock person and the very balanced person in a lot of other areas of my life, which was really, you know, more complicated than that in repression and other reasons. But it was like I was a different person. So that made me feel like, is this relationship even healthy for me? Like, why am I like this? Why do I get like this in this relationship? And then I think added to that was that when I was in those moments of dismissiveness, because dismissive avoidant, you know, feels more like sort of coldly logical, that felt like more rational to me than the other way I was. And mm-hmm. and that was the same times when I would be doubting everything. And right. so I started to wonder, is that like actually the healthy side of me? So I really didn't understand like that volatility at all. And I hated the way it felt, like just it felt sort of out of control.
Yeah, that must have been frustrating just not knowing like what the heck is going on here. Like, why is this coming up for me and what do I do about it? So it's really cool how you found PDS and attachment theory to sort of address some of those issues. How else would you say that being fearful avoidant showed up in your life positively or negatively?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because there are positives, right?
Yes.
Like I always still love the depth thing. There's some stuff that I, you know, even as a healed FA, I feel like it's kind of part of my personality. Even the hypervigilance can turn towards just noticing things, but not in that way where you're making all kinds of assumptions about it. But yeah, it's interesting in the area of work, for example, work or vocation. I like a lot of the way it is. Like I value depth there too. And so mm-hmm. I really try to align with my own values.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's meant leaving something, a program or a particular job. And I think a lot of the times it was even the right decision. But the way it would happen was very FA in an unhealthy way, or it used to be, which was that'd be very quick. It's like suddenly I was like done. I would still fulfill obligations and things like that. But I didn't ever try at all, like sort of an in-between period to see if something could be better. So like there wasn't any of that. And I think that really that's that FA boundary thing, because showing up in the work arena, because if there was a way to make it better, I wasn't going to try. And then boom, the hard boundaries. I guess I'm not going to stay at this job. So that was showing up there. And then friendships, I actually have a video on my YouTube channel about this because I find this really fascinating. So it really relates to the depth thing again, but the depth thing was making invisible a thing that wasn't maybe good for every friendship that I had,
mm-hmm.
which was, I called the video out of sight, out of mind. So it's like, if someone isn't directly or wasn't directly in my life more regularly, you know, mm-hmm. it didn't have to be that they were necessarily in the same city, but if it wasn't as much of a regular thing, then I would treat them more DA. And I didn't realize that though. I just thought of it like the whole thing that's like, you're really close to someone and you see them again and it's like, no time has passed. So yeah. I thought of it like a good thing. Like, oh, if you're my friend, like, we'll just pick right back up. And that works for some people. It really does. Mm-hmm. That can mm-hmm. work. But not everybody does that work for, particularly if someone's a little more AP or something.
Right.
For them, they prefer having, you know, some times of connection and staying connected, even if it's not always to the depth for every single time.
Yeah.
So that's really like a way it showed up with friendships. And I still love depth of connection in friendships, but I feel like I understand that better. And I even in a way value like the other kinds of check-ins and things more, maybe because I can see that a little more from their perspective now.
Right. Wow, there's a lot of good stuff in there. So that thing that you said about how, you know, oh, it's so nice before to have friends that like, if you don't see them, you don't talk to them for 6 months, then when you happen to reconnect, it's like no time passed or whatever. And you said that works for some people. So do you think the best thing to do in a relationship is to establish if that works for both of you? Because of course, one side could be like, oh, this is perfect. Like I don't have to put in a lot of maintenance work or, you know, check in with this person and they're fine with me not being in their life for months at a time. But do you think it's important to ask the other side, hey, it seems like we have this kind of dynamic. Is this okay for you? Does that work for you as well? Do you think that's a good idea to sort of ask just to make sure that the other side is happy with the sort of quote unquote agreement?
Absolutely. I just think being proactive like that and communicating ahead of time about things just in general is the way to go. But like, especially in that case, yeah, trying to make an agreement, and it might have to be a compromise, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you for sure want to maintain the relationship, you know, like in my case, I couldn't just assume that that was going to be okay for them.
Right.
Needed to be discussed. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. And then when you mentioned the career area of things for FAs, Is it that because they don't have the sort of voice, there's a lot of fear behind asking for what they might need or setting boundaries with a boss? So because of that disempowerment, they're like, the only option is either to stay and suffer or to leave. Was it sort of that?
I think it's partly like the not unfamiliarity with setting the like smaller boundaries. That's a lot of it. And then also just like it sort of reaching that boiling point. And so it's kind of like flipping into DA a little bit because of that, I think. And one other area I wanted to touch on just briefly is spirituality, because we often don't necessarily talk about that. But I think all of this kind of work can be so easily subject to spiritual bypass. And I was absolutely doing that, you know, sort of from a spiritual depth perspective, like thinking, oh, this is so great. Or you earlier in my life, it was from more of a harmony perspective, like forgive just right away or that kind of thing. And so I think that it's really easy to spiritually bypass things. And, you know, what I've learned on my spiritual journey is that like all of this integration really is where the freedom is, though, and it all gets welcomed and integrated. And so that's definitely been part of the whole thing, too.
Yeah, for sure. But I like that you need balance in sort of all the seven areas. Like if you're just going all in on spirituality, you could probably feel really good and get some great benefits that way. But you're going to be probably leaving sort of the physical area and the relationship sometimes because you're just totally all in on that one area. And yeah, that term spiritual bypassing, I guess. Do you want to just quickly, if our audience has never heard that term, what is spiritual bypassing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the most basic definition would just be that you're avoiding something that you need to grow through or to face by either spiritual practices. Usually it's more spiritual concepts, I would say, though. But so you're not kind of doing the work and it's like plastered over sort of with the spirituality, which isn't anything actually against spirituality. It just shows that like all of this work is also relevant to spirituality as well, because, you know, my healing journey very much has also been my spiritual journey. So all that work is like really, to me, it's like so much about integration.
Right, right. Lovely.
So I have some exciting news, which is that we are doing $1,000 off of our lifetime membership sale to the Personal Development School, which means you get access to literally everything at PDS for your entire rest of your life. Essentially, that entails all of our different courses you have lifetime access to. I do 4 live webinars a week, every single week. You can access them ongoing, and you get access to all of our daily community events permanently. So literally access to everything at the PDS platform forever. And if you're looking to find community, you're looking to connect with like-minded people who are also working on their relationships, care about emotional connection and healing, we've got all those different events. And if you just want the security of that ongoing support and connection whenever you need it, that's just on demand, that is there for you. We have that 24/7 sort of component because you can post in our specific chat channels, connect with other community members. And we literally have so many people from across the world supporting each other, helping each other out, and most importantly, really becoming securely attached and seeing the results. So I'd love to see you on the other side, and you can access it by using the link in the description box below.
So what has been one of your personal areas, biggest areas of inner growth through healing your attachment styles? What is something like years ago you can look now and be like, wow, like I've grown a lot in that area?
Yeah, it's funny because I still believe I'm so empathic, and I am. But there's this way in which, you know, particularly through very specific work like this and interacting people and understanding something very specific like attachment styles helps me to understand how it kind of only goes so far. I still wasn't fully understanding, you know, as empathic as I was not understanding that I still had my own worldview, right? Like I wasn't understanding that at the depth. I knew like, sure, I could have conceptually maybe told you that, but I didn't understand deeply like in my being that I have my own worldview, I have my own expectations, and like it really is different for somebody else. Like it sounds so simple, but like to understand that fully and like practically, I think it takes like this kind of work to really understand that.
Wow, that does sound like a big area of growth. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
So we know you've been a member of the Personal Development School for how long, would you say?
It's coming on 3 years.
What would you say your time there? What's your favorite tool or teaching that you found has kind of helped you the most?
Yeah, it's definitely the conflict resolution steps in that conflict resolution course. I don't even want to go into all the steps because I think you have to just do it. Like, so I really recommend it. Like, go do that course if you do nothing else. And, you know, if, especially if you want to shift it in the way that it was for me, like in this stuck long-term relationship pattern. So what I was talking about earlier with that low point that I hit, that is what it really, what finally shifted that. And we're talking about decades of that, right? Decades of it. And it actually shifted quickly. Things don't always shift quickly, but in this case it did. So I'd say the overall way to describe it is that it is about recognizing and identifying trigger patterns, and you can do it for a particular issue. You can do sort of your ones that are the most likely to come up, but you can also like think of some particular issues and you know, places of conflict that you have to think about it. And it's so helpful for, because what I didn't understand was it's sometimes easier, you know, if just one person is having a core wound activated. If you're both having it activated at the same time, this is why we were so stuck, because you're both dysregulated, you're both having the core wound activated, but not understanding why. And so it's very difficult unless you do this kind of process. So you've identified it, and then you're gonna, when you have a communication or working through an issue, you're gonna be really mindful of that. And you try to proactively diffuse a bit so that the core wound doesn't at least come up as strongly. So to put it concretely, I mentioned that defeatist sort of thing. So what I came to understand was that in my husband, that actually was the I'm helpless, dismissive, avoidant core wound, which makes a lot more sense, right? Because here he was willing to talk to me and try to work on issues. It wasn't really that he was defeatist, but suddenly he would go into that, you know, state. You could almost just see it even in his body language, this sort of helplessness and defeat. And so understanding that is just so helpful. So you can go in proactively and say, you know, say some, I thought I was being proactive before, right? Here I am bringing up the issue, trying at least at the beginning to keep, you know, to have a good tone, all of that. But without understanding the trigger patterns, I hadn't realized that I could also go in and say something like, hey, we're going to figure this out. I just want to mention this so we can figure it out. Coming in and just really saying those words was so important. And I think it's maybe interesting to note too that you can do some of this work. Like, obviously, I believe in healing one's attachment style, as I've done, but he never like has done, for example, the reprogram. He has not fully healed his attachment style. It just hasn't been like his time or whatever to do that and his interest in that. But we still shifted this because we both were working on these particular tools about communication.
Yeah.
And trigger patterns. So it is possible for like the other person still needs to be willing to work with you, you know,
for sure.
Steps. But it's also possible that one person's doing more of the work than the other.
Right, right. One can sort of like lead a little bit or sort of set up the parameters. But like you said, if the other person's like not willing, that's going to be a pretty tough go. But if somebody's willing to at least learn and understand and kind of, you know, try to work with you, then that's going to be a lot better chance of success.
You know, and this is reminding me of a conversation I had with a friend of mine a couple weeks ago. And I had trouble articulating my answer to her, but I think I have it more now.
Mm-hmm.
She was asking me about long-term relationships because she knows that we had, you know, healed this conflict that we had and this stuckness. She said something like, isn't it really just about accepting the other person then? And I was like, no. Well, I mean, yeah. And I was like, it is, but it isn't, but it is, but it isn't. And I think that is the key, that it's really this deep mix of making the changes, but also honoring the reality of the other person.
Right.
But what's so beautiful about this work is that that's really what you're doing. You're both working on it together, taking these steps, but you're also showing up vulnerably, and you understand on a much more deep level where your partner's coming from and have that compassion for them too.
Right, right. I love that. Yeah, I know when I was at my most unhealed, if a partner tried to change me, or that was me interpreting that they don't like me as I am, that they only want this better future version of me, I'd get really, really upset, when really, you know, they're trying to work through issues in the relationship. And, you know, if somebody's willing to bring these things up and not just point the finger, but, you know, try to work through it collaboratively. And I think you touched on it before. It's like, we can work on this together. You said something where it was like collaborative language. And if you're saying like, let's work through this together, we can, you know, work on this and then lay out a plan. If it's not all like, you need to change, it's because of you that this relationship's not going well. We all know how that's going to go, right? So
right.
It's that collaboration.
And I think that coming to that mindset is actually important for everyone. It was particularly important with that I'm helpless wound. But let's say someone else's wound is more around like being heard or something like that. You could also start it with something like that. Like, I'm going to do my best to try to hear you. Let me know if I'm not. I know sometimes my mind can wander, like whatever it is, to try to like upfront state that can really diffuse it.
Right. That makes sense. So in your coaching practice that you do, is there an area that you tend to specialize in? One area that you're sort of really hone in on and work your best magic?
Yeah, so definitely long-term relationships, but I'd say I also have two kind of other maybe flavors. So just in healing attachment styles in general, I really like the nuanced stuff. I really like making it concrete with a lot of examples, like helping people see where it might be sort of hidden. Because I think important as it is to get the concepts and the insight, we still can have mental models. Like I focus on this in my YouTube channel as well. Like we still can have these mental models that sort of hide from us that like, oh, this applies to me because we're thinking it's like, oh, it looks more like this. And so I think that the more we can hear lots of variety in how it shows up for people, that's like really important. And then also just in working on it, trying to think about it like as openly as possible and not get too stuck in the mental models of what exactly it looks like, even though having it to start with is very important as the insight. And then I'd say the other flavor is the mindset and reprogramming is very important in my work. And so even in some of my life coach working and work where people aren't specifically coming for a program of healing, there's a lot of that I do. And so there's even some other tools that I have from that training as well. And then sometimes people combine it with breath work because that can be a good time for reprogramming when you have those alpha or theta waves going. And so that can be combined with coaching. And then I also have a couple of donation-based classes for people who maybe are doing the reprogramming on their own, or they just want to do breath work for the well-being.
Right. I know breath work in the whole grand scheme of things is fairly new in popularity. Like it's been around, I'm sure, forever. But do you find you have to, people come to you wanting to do breath work, or do you sort of introduce that into sessions and say, hey, I'm trained in breath work, it has all these benefits? Is it sort of you letting them know about it and then they're like, wow, this is amazing? Or is it them coming to you saying, oh, you're a breath work coach, how can I do this work with you?
Yeah, I would say a little of both, but a little more me, actually. In this area, I think I'm kind of the only one for a while ways around who does that specific methodology of the elemental rhythm breath work, you know, which has its own focus, like, well-being overall, but it's definitely like, has some of the mindset and reprogramming and breakthrough kind of stuff that goes along with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of feel like I'm helping to get it out there in the world, even though it's already very much well going in a lot of places. But
Right. Yeah, I know, that's wonderful. I'm glad you're doing that. And I mentioned to you before, Gio, the co-founder of PDS, who started Elemental Rhythm, does breathwork coach training, and he's done a few for the company, and they're just unbelievable. You can have these like big shifts in just like one session. So I'm really happy you're kind of bringing that to your clients. So I just want to know, like, as a former FA who's done a lot of work on your own healing, if somebody's listening right now and they're FA and they're just finding it out, and maybe they're feeling, oh my gosh, this is so much, you know, stuff I got to work on. And can I ever actually really heal? Like, what words of sort of inspiration would you give somebody listening now who maybe started their journey recently?
Yeah, I think that it's important to think somewhat flexibly. So I think that the key maybe is to think of things that might feel like a setback. Try to take that as information. That's information that's actually really helpful and is going to help you tweak things so they work better for you on your healing journey. So I think that's really important. And reprogramming is a good example of that. It's a good place to start. You know, people can really take that seriously and start doing that. Things shift in such a way that it's like hard to even pinpoint like how it shifted. And it, you know, it's ideally a long-term thing because we usually have more than one core wound to reprogram, for example, but it starts to shift just with doing the work overall for, you know, for long enough. But for example, let's say the reprogramming is just not working. We can get really frustrating. It's difficult, right? You have to make it into a habit, and habits can be hard to form, but there are techniques. And I think, but then thinking flexibly, like maybe you can, you know, record your voice in saying the evidence. Maybe you can do something different like breath work. Maybe you can try a different time of day. So if you can try not to take things as setbacks, but more as information that will help you I think that's like a mindset that's really important. And like in terms of overall inspiration though, I mean, just I've done it. So many people have done this healing. And so it's absolutely possible. And I think it's important to believe kind of in the steps, to believe in those smaller steps. Sometimes things transform quickly. It can happen. But sometimes it's slower. And it's like, I think Thais often talks about this when she talks about needs and meeting your own needs. Like it's these drops in the bucket. And like that can seem unimportant for each individual one, but they really do add up. And so things will shift over time. But you kind of have to have that belief going into it to commit to it.
That's inspiring. So Sonia, we like to get an inside look at what people are doing. So maybe on a day-to-day basis to keep themselves grounded in a good place. Are there any sort of rituals, non-negotiable things that you do every day to keep you in a good place?
Yeah. So sometimes that's core wound reprogramming. I'm actually not doing that right now because I had one crop up though in the last year where I think it was the I'm not worthy one, which had been a little hidden for me. I sort of hadn't figured out like how that was affecting me and thought, well, do I somehow not have that? And then I was like, oh, this is how it's showing up for me. So I'm not actually currently doing any of that though. Who knows? But I'd say the two main categories are in mindset and nervous system regulation. So for mindset right now, I have a daily five minute morning meditation that I just found one I really liked on YouTube that I listened to. And, you know, it's quite positive. It's a gratitude practice actually, but like for the day that's coming. And what I find helpful about that, I think everyone has to find their own thing that works for them. But for me, it keeps me like open starting the day. So, you know, it's so easy to just dive into like your to-do list or just like wondering how the day is going to go. If I'm feeling grateful for the day already, I feel much more open. And then throughout the day, little mindset checks. Like if I notice, I try to catch it early if I'm starting to go into overwhelm or occasionally catastrophizing, that kind of thing. I try to catch that and kind of ask myself, is that really true? Can help, you know, if it's going a little more that way, can help to do some nervous system regulation before even asking myself that question. And then in terms of the nervous system regulation overall, I try to do it periodically. So sometimes you don't do it if you don't have it be more specific. So I often do it when I make a change. Like let's say I get up from where I was sitting to work or I change the room that I'm going into. Mm. I use those times to do sort of mindfulness and grounding kind of things. So I'll try to notice, you know, where I'm in space, sensory things, feel grounded into my body, maybe take some nice deep belly breaths. And I'd say those are the things, yeah, that really help keep me in more of that state of well-being and openness.
Yeah. I like that idea of kind of doing it as you're changing space or location. Because, you know, we're all wanting to get up away from our computer, stretch, do other things. So why not take that opportunity to get in a little bit of regulation techniques, mindfulness and whatnot. And if you're open to it, would you be able to give me the YouTube video link to that gratitude meditation? I'll put it in the show notes for our viewers. 5 minutes a day, and it sounds like it starts your day off on a really good way. So I would love to share that.
That reminds me of what a point I was going to make too about those steps is that like at the same time, kind of like a 5 minute meditation is great if it works for you. It's so great to have small steps that we can take because, you know, it's so much more achievable and like easier to integrate to have them. So if we can try to think of them positively too, not like, oh, it's just this tiny step I'm taking, both believing that it's going to work and shift things and get additive with other things, but also being like, yay, it is a small step I can take. It's easiest to do that, you know, building on those small steps.
Totally. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Sonia, what services are you offering these days?
Yeah. So various one-on-one coaching packages that can be combined with breathwork, but I also have those couple of donation-based breathwork classes too. And then I have some more ideas for some group educational or workshop kind of like offerings, Q&A maybe down the line. They're not quite fully formed yet. So the best thing probably is to get on my newsletter, which, you know, you can access from my website, just so that when those come up, those will probably be either free or low cost, sort of different combinations of that.
Perfect. And then lastly, how can people get in touch with you? Website, social media, whatnot?
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a mouthful, so I'll say it slowly. So my website is wholenessconnectionjourney.com/relationship. So to get right to this PDS stuff, that's the best way to go. So I'll say it one more time. So it's wholenessconnectionjourney.com/relationship. And then the YouTube channel is Wholeness Connection Relationship. So it just kind of drops the journey part. So if you want to find that, you can also find that on the website too, though, because I post the videos there too.
Perfect. And we'll definitely put those in the show notes so people can just click on it. Yeah. Well, Sonia, thank you so much for joining us today. Really nice to hear about your journey and sort of what all you're offering now and, you know, what good service you are to people in your coaching and what you're doing. So I just want to thank you again for coming, and I wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Of course. And for our guests, thanks for joining today, and good luck on your healing journey.